Nobody expected the end of the world to arrive on a summer evening in Surrey. Yet there it was, a massive cylinder, still hot from its journey through space, half buried in the common like a monstrous artillery shell. Curious locals gathered around this meteorite, chatting idly about scientific oddities while their children played nearby. Then the cylinder began to unscrew from within. What emerged wasn't the friendly cosmic neighbor we might hope for today. It was something that would redefine humanity's place in the universe forever. H.G. Wells didn't just write an alien invasion story in 1898. He held up a mirror to Victorian England's imperial arrogance and asked a devastating question. What if we were the colonized instead of the colonizers? The answer would terrify readers for generations and fundamentally reshape how we imagine contact with extraterrestrial life. The Martians reject diplomacy with the heat ray, an invisible beam that vaporizes everything instantly. The White Flag delegation simply ceases to exist. This isn't Victorian warfare with formations and honor. This is efficient, emotionless extermination. Then come the fighting machines, towering tripods of gleaming metal striding across England with terrifying grace. Each stands taller than any building, jointed legs carrying them over houses and hills. Writhing tentacles manipulate weapons with inhuman dexterity. Artillery and infantry volleys prove pathetically inadequate. The empire that conquered a quarter of the globe discovers what overwhelming technological superiority feels like from the receiving end. What makes the Martians truly nightmarish isn't their weapons, but their complete indifference. They don't hate us, that would acknowledge our significance. They view us as cattle, useful resources, nothing more. Handling machines pluck humans from hiding and deliver them to pits, where Martians inject human blood directly into their veins. Drained corpses are discarded like empty bottles. This horror forces an uncomfortable truth. We've done exactly this to other species and peoples we deemed lesser. The Martians simply make explicit the logic of imperial conquest.
6 million fleeing London creates chaos, Wells describes with documentary precision. The wealthy wave worthless money. Families separate in the crush. Social hierarchies dissolve within hours. The gentleman and laborer become equals in terror, their class distinctions revealed as pretense. Through the narrator's brother, we witness this exodus firsthand. He encounters a young woman whose husband vanished, and together they push toward the post. Roads become rivers of humanity flowing from the advancing Martians. People fight over food, water, and cart space. Some maintain dignity, others loot and trample the weak. Victorian England prided itself on order and moral superiority. Faced with existential threat, these values evaporate like morning dew. One moment of genuine heroism emerges. The ironclad Thunderchild deliberately engages two Martian fighting machines to allow refugee ships to escape. The ship rams one tripod, toppling it into the sea, before being destroyed by the second. This sacrifice saves thousands, one of few instances where human courage actually matters against the invaders. Yet even this victory feels hollow. Two machines destroyed, while dozens more ravage the countryside.
For nearly 2 weeks, the narrator watches the Martians through a triangular crack in the ruins. They are primarily brain-enormous heads with large, expressionless eyes, supported by 16 tentacular appendages. No digestive systems, no sleep, no emotions, pure intellect made flesh. Their technology defies understanding. Handling machines assemble fighting machines with mechanical precision. Nothing uses wheels. Instead, artificial musculature contracts when electrified, creating almost organic movement. Most ominously, they release red weed seeds that grow with terrifying speed, choking rivers and covering the landscape in crimson. The psychological toll nearly breaks him. His companion, a curate, descends into religious mania, interpreting the invasion as divine punishment. When the man begins shouting hysterically, threatening their discovery, the narrator strikes him down, an act of desperate survival that haunts him.
The Martians represent a chilling evolutionary endpoint, beings who developed intelligence to its extreme while losing everything that makes existence meaningful. They possess no art, no music, no capacity for beauty or compassion. Are we heading toward this same fate, the narrator wonders, as we increasingly subordinate human connection to technological efficiency? Escaping his prison, the narrator encounters an artilleryman with an elaborate survival plan. Gather the strong into London's sewers, create an underground civilization, and eventually challenge the Martians. The weak and silly have to die, he declares. Social Darwinism elevated to governing philosophy. Initially impressed, the narrator helps dig a tunnel, but inconsistencies emerge. Despite weeks of freedom, the artilleryman has made minimal progress. When evening comes, they abandon work for champagne and cards. The grand vision is merely talk, dreams without commitment, comfortable delusions over difficult reality. This encounter presents humanity's responses to catastrophe, ruthless pragmatism that sacrifices compassion, or self-deception that avoids truth. The narrator chooses a third path, continuing toward London to face reality directly, representing the scientific mindset Wells endorses. The artilleryman's vision also reveals Wells' critique of social engineering, how easily meritocratic ideals become excuses for selfishness rather than genuine reconstruction. London stands empty, not destroyed, but suspended in eerie stillness. The narrator wanders through streets that should teem with millions, but now echo only with his footsteps. Possessions lie abandoned, occasional bodies mark where people collapsed in flight. Then he hears it. Ula, 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 ula. A mournful howling echoing through the deserted metropolis. Following this cry, he discovers a Martian fighting machine, standing motionless yet continuing its wail. As dawn approaches, the crying suddenly ceases. Approaching Primrose Hill, he makes an astonishing discovery. Black birds circle motionless fighting machines. All the Martians are dead, killed not by human weapons, but by terrestrial bacteria against which they had no immunity. These microscopic organisms, which humans evolved to resist through countless generations, proved fatal to invaders who possessed no such resistance. This twist carries profound implications. Human supremacy on Earth isn't guaranteed by intelligence or technology, but by billions of years of evolutionary adaptation. By the toll of a billion deaths, man has bought his birthright of the Earth, and it is his against all comers. Yet this victory is humbling. We didn't win through courage or ingenuity, but through microscopic allies we barely understood existed. The narrator reunites with his wife, haunted by visions of the dead city. Humanity salvages Martian technology. Heat rays and flying machines become blueprints for study. The red weed succumbs to terrestrial bacteria, just as the Martians did. The deepest impact is psychological. Earth is no longer our secure possession. Wells suggests the invasion might promote human unity. National boundaries seem petty against existential threats from another world. Yet trauma leaves permanent scars. Will humanity learn genuine humility about our cosmic place or rebuild old certainties until the next crisis? In our world of climate change, pandemics, and nuclear weapons, Wells' vision feels disturbingly relevant. Our most sophisticated technologies cannot always protect us from fundamental biological realities. The War of the Worlds reminds us that survival requires not just technological advancement, but wisdom, humility, and recognition that we share this planet with forces far more powerful than ourselves.